supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dr. Dan Gottlieb. Fans of masterpiece classics Downton Abbey view all manner of dangerous attractions, like when Lord Hepworth, who's courting Lady Rosamond, is spotted with the maid.
I hope this isn't a practical joke.
It is a joke, in a way, I'm afraid.
My dear, this isn't what it seems.
Is there room for misinterpretation?
But I can promise.
Clearly, I have been managed and steered by an expert hand, which I now see has not been yours.
But Rosamond...
Let her go. It's over. Don't make yourself ridiculous. Good advice. Why not marry her? She'll more than cover any social flaws with her resourcefulness. Isn't that what I'm always saying? You silly old whatnot.
There are no more trains tonight, so you'll have to leave first thing.
Oh, don't worry, we will.
Ooh, while Lord Hepworth and Lady Rosamond's relationship does not survive infidelity, some relationships do manage to move forward despite the breach of trust, the emotional pain, and a huge blow to sense of self experienced by the hurt partner after an affair. On today's show, what it's like during the aftermath of an affair. We're going to be talking about this period of time in terms of various stages in which couples cope with issues of trust, honesty, and forgiveness. My guest is clinical psychologist Dr. Janice Spring. In 1996, she wrote After the Affair, Healing the Pain and Rebuilding Trust When a Partner Has Been Unfaithful. This first edition sold more than 500,000 copies, and a new edition of the book comes out next month, including advice on cyber relationships. Janice Spring, welcome to Voices on the Family.
Good morning.
I did say Voices on the Family. Voices in the Family. Thanks for joining us. Janice, immediately it's clear to Lady Rosamond that Lord Hepworth's indiscretion means the relationship is over, no discussion. Now, this makes sense for a number of reasons, if some of you follow the show Downton Abbey. But in real life, we don't usually have such a witty response or quick reflex to pull the plug when an affair is revealed, do we?
Right, and I don't know that our initial response is our most thoughtful response. And, I have a private practice, so if people are so certain that they want out of the relationship and nothing, they don't want to work to repair it, they usually don't come in for therapy. So those aren't the cases that I see. Usually they're ambivalent enough that they would like to see what is it that they could salvage from this relationship, or at least one partner is interested in salvaging the relationship and wants to fight for it.
Can you give us a working definition of an affair, sexual or emotional? Just kind of lay that out for us a little bit.
Well, it's a very important question, because the problem with infidelity is that partners in the marriage or the committed relationship have different definitions, and that's where the trouble begins. And people often don't spell out what is their definition of infidelity. But the truth is, most people know what their partners will tolerate, and the reason they keep their affair relationships a secret is because they know their partner wouldn't be happy with it. But I would say, in general, that affairs are about secrets and the betrayal of trust. And now with the Internet, this becomes a fuzzier response, what constitutes an affair.
Absolutely.
Because people are spending hours talking with virtual partners whom they'll not only never meet, they'll never touch, they'll never meet, they'll never see in real life.
Right, right.
And so what constitutes an affair?
Exactly. We will spend some time on that during the show for sure. Your book addresses infidelity in terms of trauma, likely at the hand of someone whom you've been closest to, your spouse or partner. You say even the healthiest and well-adjusted can experience this kind of trauma.
I think it's a very important point. When hurt partners come in to see me, they're often embarrassed, even humiliated, to admit how badly they think they're doing. It's a very crazy-making time. You don't just lose your partner's trust or fidelity. What happens is it is a trauma, and there are many psychological losses, including the loss of self,
mm-hmm.
where, for example, you may have known yourself, you think of yourself as plucky and energetic and sexy and attractive and intelligent. Then when you find that your partner has had an affair, you lose all of this good sense of yourself, and you feel, you know, dull, like water in a vase. And people are very angry about this because they, no matter what they do, they can't seem at that point to recapture their familiar self, but they're also very ashamed. And understanding that this response is a normal response, that they're not doing anything wrong, can be enormously healing and can create a holding ground where people can begin to exhale and appreciate what's happened and begin to catch, you know, stand on their feet again.
Sure, sure. You're listening to Voices in the Family. I'm Jennifer Lynn in for Dan. I'm talking to Janice Spring, author of After the Affair, Healing the Pain and Rebuilding Trust When a Partner Has Been Unfaithful. It's coming out as a second edition next month. And you can give us a call if you're listening to the show and you want to add something to the discussion. Our number is 1-888-477-9499. I want to get back to that sense of self that's lost. I'm thinking it must feel like just being in the basement of your heart.
A prison or a basement is a good analogy. People are suffering; they don't know how to get out. And other losses that they experience is the basic loss of control over their mind. So again, people shouldn't think about loss of fidelity. There are all these psychological losses. Loss over the control of your mind and your behavior. So you find yourself obsessed with the affair. That's all you think about. You find yourself checking. And today, of course, there's so much to check with emails and text messages and all the electronic devices. And people are checking your partner's GPS system, where the partner says they're going to the CVS to pick up something, and they go on the GPS and they find out, well, they didn't go to that address. They went to another address, or they went to see their divorce attorney, or they went to see the affair person, and their fax machines. And it goes on and on, where people have lost control over their minds. People who aren't normally obsessive find themselves dwelling in the injury, and it leaves no energy or time for any other thought, and it's not interesting, and it's not fun, and people are resentful over this.
And I imagine that ties into one's sense of justice in the world. You know,
yes.
You've lost control. What you thought was right is wrong, or everything's upside down. Can you talk about that sense of justice in the world is all twisted?
Yes, that's another significant loss, loss of sense of justice. And it goes to, how does this world work? How does marriage work? Are my basic assumptions that have helped me to live life reasonable? And this speaks to how the ground is pulled out from under the hurt partner, where you thought perhaps if you were a good and loving partner, you could count on your partner treating you in kind. And you realize that the world doesn't operate according to these rules, to these laws of order. And you have a sense, you know, I don't really know how to live on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know how it works. I'm kind of in free fall. And it can be incredibly disorienting.
Yeah, we're talking about affairs today. Call us and let us know what you may have learned from an affair about yourself or your partner. And we want to know if you were able to stay with your partner after the affair and whether you were able to rebuild trust and connection again. Janice Spring, you suggest that hurt partners not beat up on themselves. They're feeling down anyway, and there might be that tendency to do so. And part of your job is to give the hurt partner a language to help them feel normal. That's a big job.
Yes, well, again, that's the shame and often sort of unexpressed and embarrassment about how badly they think they're doing, and how much time they're checking, and how obsessed they are, and how crummy they feel about themselves, and how critical they are of themselves. One of the great dangers of any interpersonal violation, infidelity is one of them, but whenever anyone does something to you that violates you, is when you inhale that injury and it begins to affect the way you feel about yourself. It's not just something that was done to you. It becomes who you are and the way you feel about yourself. And people have to understand that's what's happening. And, you know, they're feeling ugly, and they're feeling not just unloved, but unlovable and worthless, and also furious.
Sure. Well, you know, we were talking in our editorial meetings prior to this show about the phrases, my husband, my wife, my girlfriend, and this implies an ownership or a possession, and we don't really own each other. Do you have any thoughts about what we set ourselves up for when we speak and act in terms of owning each other?
Right. Well, I think it's one of the great challenges of any committed relationship, of figuring out what are the reasonable expectations. When we enter a relationship and we're in a romantic stage, there is an emphasis on the oneness, and this person seems so perfect for you, and you think about how compatible you are and how this person is right. But we all know that, you know, that lasts about, hormonally, lasts about 24, 27 months. And then you begin to go from the we to the I, and you begin to realize how incredibly annoying this person is and how different they are from you. And, you know, it's an awakening. So trying to regulate that I with the we is one of the great challenges of any relationship.
You know what, Janice, let's get to the phones. This is Voices in the Family. We're going to hear from Matt. Matt, welcome to the show. Hi, Matt.
Yeah, hi.
Welcome to Voices in the Family.
Hi, yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. You have a question or a comment?
Yes, you know, I just have a hard time seeing these in any other terms than that. If I'm with someone and in a committed relationship, and they cheat on me, as far as I understand, the only thing that I can do that's right is to leave and move on. Otherwise, I'm compromising myself, and I'm doing a disservice to myself. And anything if I stay with them, I don't see any way that I could ever hope to have a normal relationship with them again, or feel normal, as she put it. Maybe she could offer me some insight about that.
Sure. Thanks, Matt. Well, hang on the line, and you can listen in or just listen to the radio. So, Janice, it sounds like Matt is a lot like when we did our introduction in the beginning of the show, the Downton Abbey bit, where he knows exactly what he wants to do if this were to ever happen. He's out.
Right. Well, you know, everyone has to make his own decision, and for many that's the reasonable way to go. But I do want to say, after working with couples for over 35 years in infidelity, that often there isn't one person who's the quote-unquote hurt partner and the other who's the quote-unquote unfaithful partner. Often, interestingly, both partners identify as the hurt partner to some degree, and both in some way have offended the other. I'm not putting this on a scale and saying 50-50. I don't know what the percentage is, but there are incredible lessons that come out of a violation such as an infidelity, where people who could be married for 30 years have never really talked about, aired what bothers them in their relationship, and the person who has the affair is hurting too, hurting in legitimate ways, that their partner, they don't feel seen, they don't feel respected, they don't feel desired, they don't feel loved and cared for by their partner, and the bitterness has calcified, and somebody else comes along who's ever so adoring, and they get swept up in that relationship, and They didn't mean to hurt their partner, they may not even know why they did what they did. So I'm not in any way excusing the affair. All I'm saying is that if people want to work on their relationship and they want to unpack the affair and learn lessons from it, I know that it is possible to go on and build a stronger relationship than you've had in the past, and learn lessons from the affair. And you have to put down your self-righteousness.
Right.
And I say, if you've had an affair, take 100% responsibility. Nobody makes you have an affair. I don't care if the person clubs you every day. They don't make you have the affair. You can always say, I'm miserable, I'm leaving. You don't have to cheat on them or destroy their trust. Take 100% responsibility. But both partners have to take a fair share of responsibility, whatever that is, for how they may have contributed to the space between the two of them that made room for another person to come in between.
Janice, how hard is it for the hurt person to look at how they may have created that space for a third person to come in? That seems next to impossible.
Well, it's a good question. Yeah. It's very hard when you're hurting to take any ownership. Again, you're not taking responsibility for that other person cheating on you, but you may be taking responsibility for how you may have contributed to that person feeling unloved or unwanted by you. And the truth is that when people are very self-righteous, and they don't deserve to be self-righteous, my research has shown that these people have a harder time forgiving and a harder time reconciling in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that self-righteousness and that unwillingness to take ownership can be lethal to the relationship.
Very good, yeah. Well, we're going to take a break. Janice Spring is my guest. We are talking about the aftermath of affairs. Next month, we welcome the second edition of Janice's book, After the Affair, Healing the Pain and Rebuilding Trust When a Partner Has Been Unfaithful. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dan Gottlieb. This is Voices in the Family on WHYY-FM.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
So I decided to jump out the window in my dream, and as it turns out, in my life.
Mike Birbiglia's Sleepwalk With Me has been a This American Life piece, a one-man show, and now a film which he co-wrote with Ira Glass. On the next Fresh Air, we speak with both. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Back on Voices in the Family. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dan Gottlieb. We are talking about the aftermath of affairs and relationships. That was Hank Williams and his Drifting Cowboys playing Your Cheating Heart. My guest is Janice Spring, a second edition of her forthcoming of her book, After the Affair, Healing the Pain and Rebuilding Trust When a Partner Has Been Faithful, is coming out next month. Janice, the way that infidelity is expressed has changed a lot since you first came out with your book. And now we are so plugged in online, and we use our cell phones all the time. And you say cyberspace is a singles bar. What are you saying there? What's your take on that? Why do you say that?
When I first wrote After the Affair, there was no internet, basically. No cell phones, no Facebook. And so the face of all of this has changed dramatically, because people are spending hours, you know, on the internet now. 2 billion people regularly clicking on this virtual playground, where they are hooking up with people. They'll just with a click of the finger. And so the playing ground has changed dramatically, and people are online for hours, and it's, you know, without having to risk disease or social condemnation or spend a penny or, you know, going to bars or to sex clubs. They could just click on the privacy of their own home and have a full menu of activities.
Sure. Well, can you help spell out the difference that you see between, I saw in your book, cyber sex and cyber affair?
Well, I don't know that I would differentiate between cyber sex and cyber affair. I think what I would say is that it's up to the couple to spell out what is the difference. And people need to define their terms and define their limits. What is okay and what is not okay? People really don't talk these things out usually until there is an affair and there's an explosion, there's a nuclear meltdown, and then it's very, very hard to have a sane conversation. But, you know, really, what is okay? What is okay? Is it okay to masturbate looking at YouTube, at porn? Is it okay to friend an old high school flame on Facebook? Is it okay? Is it okay to talk about your partner, private information, things that bother you to someone online? Is it okay to fantasize about someone else when you're making love with your partner?
These are good questions, and I'd love to have our listeners chime in on those questions. 1-888-477-9499, 1-888-477-9499, talking about affairs with Janice Spring. Janice, in terms of cyber relationships, I would like you to fill in the blank at the end of this sentence as often as you can muster some answers. It's someone saying hypothetically to their partner, you are being unfaithful when you, and I'm thinking in terms of your cyberspace, you know, you're being unfaithful when you check email and close it down when I walk into the room, or, you know, what are some other examples?
Right. First, again, the point is you're making that people really need to ask this question and define their terms, mm-hmm. and then what happens is the work begins, because, of course, people are going to be very different in their definitions, and some people are going to feel very controlled and manipulated and caged if they have to go along with what their partner says is fidelity. People need to have open fidelity contracts. Now it has to pertain to cyberspace. It was a lot clearer when it was in the flesh. So I have what I call trust-building behaviors in cyberspace. And lists and lists of these behaviors to help people come up with ideas of what they might mention. So I'll read some.
Sure.
These would be what the hurt partner would request for a trust-building behavior. Okay. One, with an open heart. That means without hesitancy, without attitude, without my having to ask. Give me the passwords to your computer, email, BlackBerry, or other electronic devices, and make it easy for me to check them. Now, hurt partners become checkers when they become suspicious. This is a normal activity. You don't trust your partner, and so you want the truth. You hire a detective, or you check yourself. And often the unfaithful partner feels very insulted or controlled by this. But the reality is this is how trust is built. When the hurt partner looks and doesn't find anything, that's when the trust is built. When they look and they find something, then their suspicions are reinforced. And it is normal for them to become checkers. As you said, another one is, if I enter the room when you're on the computer, leave the screen on. I don't want you turning the screen off. Why are you turning the screen off? If what you're doing is kosher, why do you turn the screen off when I walk in the room? It drives people crazy. When I call or text you, respond as soon as possible. You know, the hurt partner is wondering, are you with her or him? When I call you, why don't you answer your phone? Why does it take you 3 hours to get back to me? Where are you?
Good can be very unnerving, absolutely. This is Voices in the Family. We're talking to Janice Spring. She's a board-certified clinical psychologist and nationally acclaimed expert on issues of trust, intimacy, and forgiveness. A new edition of her book, After the Affair, comes out next month. We're going to go to the phones, 1-888-477-9499, if you would like to call in. And we're going to hear from Charles. Charles, you're on Voices in the Family.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you, Charles?
I wanted to call to just agree with everything the author of the book has said today. I read her first book about 6 months ago, and the things she said on the radio today have really rung true. It was about a year ago my wife discovered that I was having an affair, and in the last year, my life has just been a living hell, and it's because of my own actions, and like she said, I've owned everything that I've done in this relationship. I don't put any blame on anybody else other than myself, and the main reason I really wanted to call was to warn anybody out there that may be involved in a relationship that's outside the marriage that they really ought to stop, because I'm living proof that you don't know what you have until it's gone.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your honesty in calling in to Voices in the Family. Thank you, Charles. Janice,
all the listeners hear in this man's voice tremendous remorse and also willingness to take responsibility for his share and to look honestly at himself. And so usually partners respect you and work to feel closer to you when you're willing to do that, when you're not defensive. Again, you know, I do want to leave a message of hope here for the listeners, because I think that there are a lot of people who don't necessarily have affairs, but it doesn't mean they have good marriages. They stay together. It's desperate. It's lonely.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't cheat on each other. I don't know if that's better.
Yeah.
The affair sometimes breaks the back of the marriage, but it also allows for new growth and taking responsibility and really a revitalization, which is always my wish that, people will say, you know, at the end of it all, and I don't want to say a year later or 2 years later, because it takes at least a year and a half for things after the affair is ended and people are really working to rebuild for the couple to stabilize. But I always love it then when couples will say, you know, we're not just together, we're better.
Sure. And it sounds like Charles is so upfront now, and you know, I think I imagine after an affair is revealed, many people think they're being honest, but they're only telling part of the story, and that could be aggravating to the hurt partner, too, because they want to know everything, correct?
Yeah. Well, often, neither partner knows the story.
Oh, what do you mean?
In other words, you know, when hurt partners will say, well, why did you do it? Why did you have the affair?
Oh, okay.
That's not a question that should just be answered off the cuff. That's something that the unfaithful partner has to spend time thinking about, because it's not enough to give up the affair person. You have to understand, why did you do it? And the couple needs to understand, what does it mean about you, me, and us? Because that's the disease that has to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And this understanding of why did this happen, opening that up and exploring that in the deepest way and understanding those answers are going to allow for growth in the relationship.
Sure, and that takes a lot of time.
And both partners have to take a fair share of responsibility for that, which is very hard.
Right, and that can take a lot of time. We don't have those answers at the ready. I want to go to the phones again, 1-888-477-9499. This is Voices in the Family. We are talking about the aftermath of affairs, and we hear from Lisa. Hello, Lisa. You're on Voices in the Family.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, Mike, I hope this isn't a little bit too complicated. My question is sort of this. My husband had an affair about a little over a year ago with a good friend of mine and also my daughter's best friend's mom, making it very difficult for me to see her in town. She lives, you know, a block away. I have to pass her car every day. We've been through therapy, and the last therapist told us that we basically would have to move out of town in order to get over this. And I'm just wondering, how long do you think it will take me to not sort of have my heart pound every time I see her? And
yeah.
And it just brings up bad memories each time I have to encounter her. So I'm just wondering, that she's already done this to another family. They did move out of town.
Wow. Yeah. I'm so sorry to hear about that, Lisa. Thank you.
Yes. I have lots of thoughts about that.
Sure,
but let me say a few things. It's, you know, your construction of it, if she did this to me, mm-hmm. she did this to us, I'm not in any way minimizing the violation of what she's done, but the reality is it was your husband who had the commitment to you, and if he didn't open the door, she couldn't walk through. People sometimes direct a lot of their angst and anger at the affair person, and you don't really know what he told her, and I don't know any of the details, but the person who has the commitment to you is your partner, and that is the person who has to do the work. So let me say that first. Let me say the second is that, yes, it's terrible. Every time you see her, you get re-injured. It's a memory thrown in your face, and it brings up all of the psychological losses that you will experience. Sometimes repairs can be made, and that would mean that she would have to do the hard work of offering a meaningful apology. Sometimes people want to do that, and I often have hurt partners who want to contact the affair person and have conversations with them. Sometimes, and I say, okay, we can do this, but let's think through what exactly it is that you want to say. I don't want you running into her office and making a fool of yourself.
Sure.
Let's think about what it is you want to say to her so that when you end that conversation, you walk away with dignity.
Right.
You feel very good about how you've conducted yourself. And it is possible, often with the affair person, that they are sorry and they want to offer a meaningful apology. That doesn't mean you're going to become best friends again or even right. friendly in any way. But sometimes it does salve the wound, creating opportunities for this person to come forward and make good.
Right. And Janice, I've heard you say there are no rules, no right or wrong when it comes to that period of time after an affair. I wonder if this makes it harder for couples to navigate that time, or does it give them freedom to do what they instinctively feel is the right thing to do? I mean, they can go out and buy your book and get some ideas, but I mean, generally, there is no right or wrong, no rule book, no playbook.
Yeah, people really are at a loss of what to do. Often they don't realize, they're not realistic about how long it takes to recover from an affair. So I tell people, you have to plan on at least a year and a half after there has been complete cutoff from the affair person. There are no more secrets and there's no more contact, if possible. Sometimes you work with this person or they live in town. You can't not run into each other, but as much as possible. And I prepare people, this is going to be an emotional roller coaster ride. And it's very important for you to understand there are going to be times when you feel hopeless about this process. You'll believe too much damage has taken place and you can't possibly recover from the affair. And I want people to know that those couples who are successful in rebuilding after an affair must go through those times too. So you have to hold on. You have to get through the first anniversary of the revelation of the affair. And I want people to know that during that time, you will become reactivated. The hurt partner will have memories, even with the changing of the seasons. As you come around, you know, to Labor Day, or the Jewish holidays, or whatever it is coming up in September, let's say that's when the affair was, you will begin to have flashbacks and remember. And it is very important that the unfaithful partner be with you during that time And unfaithful partners are afraid to bring up the affair because, sure, of course, it's the last thing they want to talk about. They're mm-hmm. hoping you'll forget about it. Mm-hmm. But this is the wrong strategy. So bringing it up so that the hurt partner is not alone, saying, you know, I know we're getting near Labor Day weekend. I know last year this is when my affair came out. And I'm wondering if we could spend that day, if you would let me orchestrate that day so we could have somewhat of a healing day.
Do it differently.
Yes.
Basically do it differently.
So when you get around to the following year, you have a new memory. It's kind of like a layer of healing tissue over the wound.
We just have a few seconds before the break, Janice. I've read that women tend to absorb the indiscretion in the marriage, maybe more than men do. Is that something that rings a bell with you?
You know, there are all these sex differences that are pointed out, and yeah, I don't necessarily, it's certainly not true, you know, across the board. I can't really say that the okay. research shows that, but that what's most important is to know that that's when you get injured, is when you completely blame yourself in ways that are justified, and you begin to feel not only unloved but unlovable and not good enough to love.
Oh, gosh. We have a lot of calls we're going to get to after our break. I'm so excited to get to them. Some very good questions are coming in. We will take a break. I'm talking to clinical psychologist Janice Spring. She's my guest today on Voices in the Family. We're talking about the aftermath of affairs. Next month, we welcome the second edition of her book, After the Affair, Healing the Pain and Rebuilding Trust When a Partner Has Been Unfaithful. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dan Gottlieb. This is Voices in the Family on WHYY-FM.
Are you frustrated with your child between the ages of 12 and 25 who is using drugs or drinking? Have you argued or pleaded with them to stop? The Family Training Program may be able to help. If eligible, you will be invited to attend sessions with a family specialist to help you make positive changes in your life and improve your relationship with your child. The Family Training Program is held in Philadelphia and surrounding areas by the Treatment Research Institute, a supporter of WHYY. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2 or www.iamconcerned.org.
Deborah Ellis traveled to Afghanistan to ask a simple question. How do Afghanistan's women and children see their future?
These are great, courageous, amazing kids doing really incredible things with really difficult circumstances.
Ellis discusses their stories and her recently released book, Kids of Kabul, Living Bravely Through a Never-Ending War, next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dan Gottlieb, listening to some music from the 1926 silent film, The Scarlet Letter. We're talking about the aftermath of affairs and relationships. My guest is Janice Spring, Dr. Janice Spring. A second edition is forthcoming of her book, After the Affair, Healing the Pain and Rebuilding Trust When a Partner Has Been Unfaithful. We're going to go right to the phones and check in with some of our callers. They've been calling in at 1-888-477-9499 to join our discussion. We are going to hear from, oh goodness, David. Let's hear from David. Hi, David. You're on Voices in the Family.
Yes, hi. I'd like to ask the author to speak to the issue in the circumstance of trust building when they're also parents of children, especially children who are old enough to kind of know that something's going on, and how not to let the children get sort of in the loop of the negative stuff, also simply what to tell them.
Okay, David. Janice?
Okay. It's interesting how many men are calling in, which is very refreshing.
Now, wait a minute. A few moments before the break, you said you didn't look at delineation of men and women involved with affairs.
So that's good. It's always good to contradict okay. yourself. First of all, it depends on the ages of the kids. Often what happens is that older kids hear the parents fighting, and they know what's going on. And it's a terrible burden to a child, first of all, to not have their feelings validated. And I don't think it's healthy. when a child knows that something's wrong and you're denying it and you're saying nothing's wrong, you know, we're getting along fine, the marriage is perfect, and the child is thinking, well, is this how happy married couples treat each other? Is this the model? So I think without going into details to the child, you can still validate feelings. If they're hearing something, I don't know that you have to go and say something if they don't know anything, because it disrupts their world. But to say, look, you're right, we had a terrible fight, we feel terrible about it, we said some terrible things, you might say we're going to see a doctor to try to help us get along, and you know, I'm very, very sorry that you heard that. It's awful. It's an awful way for people to talk to each other and treat each other. So sometimes it doesn't have to be any more detailed than that. Often people don't want to share the details. Partners don't want to share the details with the kids. And remember, you know, once you share, you can't ever take it back. Mm-hmm. So think about it thoughtfully. Decide together what it is you want to tell your children. And respect their ages and what it is that they're capable of understanding.
And what about adult children? You know, some of them are out of the household, but they know things are going on. They feel sort of alienated and distanced from it all, and they probably need some attention, too, and sort of staying on course and understanding what's going on a little bit, at least, between mom and dad or the two people who are partners.
Yeah. Well, you know, the problem goes both ways. More often, it's an interesting question, because more often, what happens, it's not that the children aren't told. It's that the children are used as pawns by the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And they are rallying for that child's love. And often the hurt partner, for example, wants their support. They're feeling sick anyway and so alone and so violated, so wrongly treated. They want the child as the ally, and they want the child to hate the other parent, because they're already feeling abandoned by the partner. And that kind of vying for the children's affection and their alliance can be as damaging as, you know, not telling them anything. And that I actually see that more often. And, you know, again, this affair is going to settle down. And at the height of it, that's when people are more reactive and they tend to do these things. But in the end, most kids don't want to be divided. They don't want to have to take sides.
Right.
They want their parents to get along. They want to be able to stay out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so these kinds of things, before anything is said, it should be perhaps talked over with a therapist. What is the appropriate thing to say to my child, given their age and given our circumstances?
Sure. It could be a very difficult conversation. Janice, I'm going to skip ahead to sex. You've told me that the sexual piece that goes along with staying in the relationship is probably the most difficult piece after an affair, the repairing of the sexual relationship. It's something that has to be addressed, and those conversations are a critical part of therapy.
Right. That, you know, it's interesting, because I train therapists as much as I do my private practice, and often therapists avoid talking about sex as much as the patients do. And it's an uncomfortable and sticky conversation for lots of people. But unless their sexual relationship is addressed directly, often it isn't healed. And again, often affairs are about sex. And what was it about the sexual relationship? What was happening, what was not happening, that made you, the affair person, more vulnerable to having the affair? And this has to be discussed. And it's incredible to me that I will see people who are married 30 years who have never discussed their sexual relationship. And forget the sexual relationship, even minor things like the husband will say, you know, my wife, for 30 years, my wife has been coming to bed wearing a face cream, and I detest the scent of it. You know, they've been together for 30 years. She doesn't know. Or the wife comes and says, so privately I want to tell you that I have been faking orgasm for 27 years. and the husband doesn't know that he's not pleasing her. What is the secret that she's keeping? He doesn't even know that he's not pleasing her. Never mind, he doesn't know how to please her. And the truth is, she may not even know what pleases her.
So
because
already,
she hasn't touched her own body.
So we've got existing problems about communicating about sex, and then we have the affair has happened, and then you've got to go back and backtrack a bit and bring this all up. It's very important. Let's get another call in. We're going to hear from, I'm going to switch it up, Al, to Mary. I want to hear from Mary. And Mary, welcome to Voices in the Family. She has a comment about moving on after changing partners. So I imagine an affair has occurred. Hi, Mary.
Hello, is this me?
Hi, can you relay what you wanted to share with us?
Yes, I wanted to ask you, our son had an affair and is in the process of divorcing his wife, whom we love very much, and they have two small children. And now he wants to bring this woman into our family dynamic. And
well, we lost Mary, but I'm getting the gist. I'm getting the gist. So we've said goodbye to one member of the family, and we're saying hello to another, and that can be very complicated, right, Janice?
You mean that the son is now dating another woman?
He is now with the affair person.
I see. He's now with the affair person, wants to bring this person into the family.
Yes.
Yeah. Again, it's interesting the amount of venom directed at the affair person, when often, again, it was her son who had the commitment to his wife, and something went wrong there. And who knows, you know, I'm not saying this is true of this person who's calling in, but sometimes the affair person is in the dark, too. Sometimes the affair person is told that the marriage isn't good and that they're in the process of getting a divorce. They don't even know the truth, that the person they're having the affair with is lying to them about what's happening in the marriage and the secrecy about it, and they're relatively in the dark. So, but again, you know, it just talks about family dynamics and how painful it is to reshuffle the cards,
right?
And
right.
To have people you love be cut out, and the mother of your kids, father of your of the grandkids, and to have this new person introduced so quickly. Emotions don't shift so quickly.
It's hard. It's definitely a process. We will go back to the phones and try to get Nema in. Hello, Nema. You're on Voices in the Family.
Hi. You know, you talked earlier about coming up with clear boundaries or making clear to your partner what your boundaries are. And I just wonder what happens when you don't have total agreement on that, and so that, you know, then the maybe the hurt partner, you know, continues to have issues with the way the unfaithful partner is interacting with other, you know, with other people or on the internet or something like that. I mean, how do you reconcile that?
Yes, so you know, it's a very good question. So I would say this is a terrific situation, because what we have here. Is we have open disagreement. And often what we have with affairs is we have private disagreement, where people don't even know what they disagree over. And if you're going to disagree, let it be open. At least you both know about it. If, you know, sometimes this will happen. One person will say, I'm sorry, what you're asking of me, I can't agree to. I can't agree to it without resenting you, without feeling caged or controlled. Okay, now we can have a discussion. We have to negotiate that. It's not as if it's going to be so easy to agree, but at least it's on the table. And that's what has to come through these fidelity contracts, whether they're online or in the flesh. Whether the terms have to be spelled out. People have to know where when they're rubbing each other the wrong way. I give an example in the new edition, where the husband wanted to have conversations with an old girlfriend, and the wife did not feel comfortable. Forget they're seeing each other in person, having these online chats. She felt very uncomfortable because her husband had a relationship with this woman, a sexual relationship, before their marriage. And they fought about it, but at least it was out in the open, and they had to come up with something that was mutually agreeable or not agreeable, not so completely agreeable to either one of them. But at least it was done on the table.
Yeah, right. They got it out in the open. Now, we only have about a minute 10 left. And Janice, you train hundreds of therapists every year. You present at Kripalu, Smith College, Harvard. What are professionals hungry to understand at all these talks? What are they craving to get from you?
The truth is, for this work is terribly hard for professionals as well as for the couples themselves, because emotions are riding high, and people come in and they are at various levels of commitment, staying together, and they drop out. One partner drops out every week. Somebody drops out, or the emotions flare up and they're terribly intense, and it's very hard to do any therapy when people are so agitated and so wounded. And so couples therapists want concrete strategies, how to rebuild trust, how to earn forgiveness, how to manage secrets in couples therapy.
Mm. And I'll just end by saying that, you know, we all hope that couples can feel loved and cared for again. And I think they can do that with the help of Janice Spring. Great book. We've been talking about The Aftermath of Affairs with Dr. Janice Spring, an updated edition of her book, After the Affair, Healing the Pain and Rebuilding Trust When a Partner Has Been Unfaithful. It comes out next month. You can learn more about it at our website. Thank you so much for joining us, Janice.
Jennifer, may I mention my website?
It's going to be on ours. So
okay.
Just click
right
away to ours and they'll connect with you. So.
All right. Thank you very much for
absolutely,
having me on the show.
Absolutely. Anytime. Next week on Voices in the Family, giving teenagers space to learn and grow in hopes that they become responsible, resilient, and self-sufficient. You can reach the Voices in the Family production team at voices@whyy.org. You can download our shows at whyy.org/voices or on iTunes. The engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content at WHYY. Emily Haas is our volunteer. Jerome Gallman has been our summer intern. He heads back to school. Good luck, Jerome. Mike and Scott is our executive producer, filling in today for Dan Gottlieb. I'm producer Jennifer Lynn. Have a great week.
You're listening to